Well, hello. This is episode number 1151 of I Think You're Overthinking It, the podcast. Are you overthinking it? You might be. I am. Of course I am. I'm aware of it and I still do it. I've, you know, in a generalized way, kind of dedicated the theme of the podcast to that because it was sort of the unofficial theme always. And so even though I'm aware of it, I still do it. As much as I try to rein it in and just like plug all these little thought leaks, but that's okay. It's just a thing, you know, it's fine. You know, we get through it. It's fine. So I hope this podcast, you know, helps make your day a little brighter and maybe even, you know, at the very least just distracts you for an hour or so. So thank you so much for listening. I have some stand-up dates coming up October 22nd at the Irvine Improv. Such a great club. So fun, the Irvine Improv. It's really like a proper dinner theater, the Irvine Improv. I love that place. So I'll be there October 22nd. Yes, of course, with my best friend in the world, Mike Furman, who will also be joining me in Hartford, Connecticut at the Funny Bone, November 14 and 15, in preparation for something that I'm very excited about that I'll be announcing very soon. But for now, those are the important ones to know. With more dates being added soon, October 22nd, Irvine, California at the Improv, and November 14, 15 at the Funny Bone in Connecticut. And chrishardwick.com will bring up those dates for you if you need to see things in a digital fashion and purchase tickets using the magical links that take us to our destinations, our commerce-based destinations for things like purchasing tickets. That's all that. I am very excited about this episode. I love this guy, Sam Richardson, you know, and I even tell him on the podcast, like, I hope we become better friends, you know. He's just, like, not only one of the nicest people you could ever be lucky enough to meet, but legitimately one of the most talented sketch performers and improvisers, like, in existence, literally in existence. And I really love that I've had so many phenomenal comedy performers on, you know, since the podcast came back, because I find it interesting to sort of discuss. We work in this business where overthinking can benefit you to a certain degree, but then how do you get your brain out of the way at the right time so that it doesn't become detrimental? You start getting diminishing returns of overthinking, and, you know, and especially improv training, a lot of it is like, don't think, just do it. Just do the thing, you know, because when you're in a scene, you can't stop and go, oh, I have like four choices here. How can I overthink all four of them before I move it? By that time, the scene's over and the people are walking out of the theater because they just want to see people make, you know, good, quick, strong choices. So Sam was so much fun. And this all centered around the fact that we went to a concert together the night before. And Sam was kind enough. I even tried to like Venmo him back for the tickets. He was like, no, man, this one's on me, because we like a lot of the same music, you know, and we went to see, which we talk about heavily in the podcast, Toto, Men at Work, Christopher Cross, all three of whom were phenomenal. An incredible time was had at the packed Kia Forum, in which we saw all three of these acts play. If you do get a chance to see them on the road, you absolutely should, because not only do you get to hear all these songs that you have loved for so long, but the musicianship is so top-notch of every one of these acts. So I highly recommend it. And also, I highly recommend Sam Richardson. He is at the Sam Richardson on Instagram. And by the way, just in case I need to remind you, he's literally in like some of the best stuff that entertainment has to offer, like Veep or Detroiters or Bob's Burgers or Poker Face or The After Party. So listen to this podcast, follow Sam Richardson, and go see the mega triumvirate of acts that is Toto, Men at Work, Christopher Cross. If you get the opportunity, you will absolutely love it. And now I'm going to start this podcast, episode number 1151, with the hilarious and wonderful and kind Sam Richardson. Roll the thing!
Thank you.
I want to start by saying how bummed I am that it did not occur to me to wear the shirt from the concert we went to last night. You very rightfully are wearing your Men at Work 2025 shirt.
I thought you would. I thought I will be honest. I thought you were going to, but.
I bought the same shirt you have and also the Christopher Cross with the flamingo, which is stunning.
Yeah.
And when I got home last night, I was so tired, I just tossed them in the hamper. And, you know, because these shirts cover a lot of miles.
They really do.
And they tour. And then when you showed up, I was like, God damn it, why didn't I think? And I really did think about my shirt choice for you because I know what a television encyclopedia you are. And so I wore Gary Ganu from The Great Space Coaster thinking like, oh my God, Sam will love this.
And I do.
He'll know what it is. But boy, did I miss the mark. And it really, it really just sort of kind of typifies the whole experience. I apologize to you. I'm going to stop talking in a minute, Sam, because I adore you, and I just have to make my amends for last night. Sam Richardson, what I need to say to people is get yourself a friend like Sam Richardson, because Sam got tickets, and I tried to Venmo you back, and you were like, nope, these are on me. These were unbelievable seats at the Kia Forum for the triple headline bill of Christopher Cross, Men at Work, and Toto, all of whom I would have gone to see individually.
Individually, absolutely.
But you and I have bonded over our intense shared love of Men at Work and Colin Hay. And so last night I flew in from Huntsville. I came from the airport to the Kia Forum. I'd been up since 4:30 LA time. And also because I have like kind of crabby tinnitus, or tinnitus, as some people say, I had earplugs in and I started to get nervous about my hearing.
Yeah.
And so I, halfway through the show, I kind of dipped to the back of the forum because the seats you got were so good, Sam.
Yeah.
But we were in front of like a tower.
Yeah. We were on the sound waves.
And listen, I don't know who says, what happened to your hearing? Well, I just, you know, I my hearing got fucked up at a Toto concert.
Toto,
you know,
blasted, I mean, my ears out.
Yeah. They did. Christopher Cross, you know, I'm still hearing it. So I apologize to you for having to dip back during the show. I apologize to you because I kicked over your drink while I was stepping out like a total freshman move. And then I left before the end of the show because I had been up for 20 hours, and I am so sorry. You're such a good friend. Oh, I hope I can make amends properly.
Oh, there's no amends to be made. Because first off, like, we were there, you know what I mean? Same building, so enjoying the music together, you know? Even the back, and, like, you know, don't risk your hearing or your sanity for the rockin' stylings of some of the best musicians we ever
so good
encountered. And then that beer, on that beer, it was a pretty big beer. So you made it a little less ridiculous for me to manage. So
that was the tallest beer I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was waist high. So no way you weren't going to kick that thing over.
That beer could ride every ride at Disneyland.
It really could. It really could.
They'd be like, are you this? Yeah, okay, well, you can ride Incredicoaster.
Then you have to put a seatbelt on in the front seat.
Yeah, totally, totally fine. But I just have to say, that concert was so good.
Yeah.
And, I mean, every band sounded great. Christopher Cross still on point. Toto's still on point. And yeah. I got to say, Colin Hay has just not lost an ounce of his voice.
Not an ounce of his voice. Every one of those high notes, the middles, and that like gravel he wants to do with it, it's incredible. It was, I love him so much. And like to get to see him, this is my second time seeing him live. And man, it's, you know, like when you see something live and it's better than the album. I don't know if it's better than the album. I won't say that because I love those albums are so well engineered, you know, and he layers himself over the song. So he's singing his own harmonies. But he is such a great performer that it's just so much fun to watch him. He's like an A plus on banter as well. You know, it's just like
he's so funny.
He's so funny. He's a little Scottish man, just like telling you a story, and you're just like, yes, tell me anything.
It's like he doesn't talk a ton in between the songs, but everything he says is a home run.
Yeah.
And it's like watching a really great episode of Storytellers.
Yes,
where you're, because he's just very naturally comedic, and he always has been. And also, like, thematically, so many of the songs sort of deal with these, like, they're these, like, you know, real upbeat, bouncy tunes, but about kind of deep mental health stuff.
Yes.
About paranoia and anxiety and, you know, like the voices in your head at night, you know. And so he's like the complete package.
I agree wholeheartedly.
I also huge shout out to Toto. And I mean, like, when you realize that Toto was the backing band for so many of the amazing albums in like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And that Joseph Williams, a lead singer, is the son of John Williams. I mean, it's like, you know, there's so many different touch points where you're like, you listen to a Toto concert and you're like, oh, right, they wrote that one. Oh, shit, that one too. Oh, my God, that one too. It's just like. Song after song after song.
Yes, fully. And you know, I consider myself like a little bit of, you know, knowledgeable of music. For the life of me, I was so sure that Georgy Porgy was a Fagin song.
Steely Dan.
Steely Dan. I was so sure it was Steely Dan, and then they started playing. I was like, oh no,
that's Toto.
That's Toto.
Yeah.
It, you know, they run the gamut, and like it's so cool to like see to be reminded. You're like, oh yep, that's another slam dunk. That's another hit, another hit, another hit, another hit.
By the way, one thing I really appreciate about a middle aged concert, a middle aged to boomer concert, is fucking right on time. They started that concert to the second Christopher Cross is on stage, and you know, already into "It's All Right." I think we're by like 6:47. I mean, it was flawless, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. This is what it's like going into deep adult concerts where everyone is like, we don't." No one's got time to fuck it. Everyone's got are tired.
We
you know?
Started out tired. Let's, you know, let's go.
Yeah. If the ticket says 6:45, it's 6:45.01. Yeah. It's like the band is striking the first chord, and he was exactly an hour, like 30 minutes exact break for. Then Colin Hay was on for like an hour. I mean, it really, you really have to appreciate, and also. Didn't see a ton of phones up because I'm like, oh yeah, we're the generation that saw concerts before that, so it's not as prevalent.
Exactly. Like the only time you see a phone up is like somebody taking a photo or a video so that they can look at it later, actually. You know?
And not just capture it.
Not just capture it. Like, no, okay. And they also like be like, oh, I remember I was here. Okay, very good. Just kind of like to
supplement the memory. I just feel like we've become this society of like hoarders of I've got to capture up life moments. Yeah. You gonna watch these?
No, I don't know.
No, what? I could.
For what? I mean, just in case.
But I'm not going to, but yeah, I could.
I could. In case I lose all my memory, they can download it into my head.
And one day I'll try to walk into my kitchen and all of my video files will fall on top of me and crush me. Because I've captured everything that I've never watched.
It's like, yeah, what if one day, you know, we go into the Matrix and then all the stuff that we like don't think about being like physical space, we're faced with.
I love this idea because this is almost, but basically what you're talking about is like, if you're kind of marrying the ideas of like of traditional heaven and like technology and like a Matrix kind of technological existence, that these two things are woven together, and it's like whoever digital Saint Peter is,
exactly,
you know, he's like, well, you sure
you got a lot of
stuff,
man.
Shit to sort through.
Yeah, you got a lot of shit. You got a lot of pictures of cats, bro.
I don't know if you needed to take that video of all the people on the wall at the Forum who performed there. Did you need Britney Spears and Cher like in a video? You could have just remembered that they performed there. Why did you capture that?
Want to make sure. Just wanted to make sure.
I just wanted to remind myself at a future date of, oh, that's right. All of those performers very expectedly performed at this large
thing, which Google would have told you.
Yeah, also. Yeah, absolutely. But no, it's because it's like our capture space is near infinite and we can, you can immediately just sort and store, then why not just capture as much as possible?
Rather have it than not.
I had texted you a couple weeks ago because you posted Overkill, a Men at Work song, with a video. And I said, oh, hey, I happen to have Colin Hay doing an acoustic version of this. And I sent it to you. And that's when we decided, like, I think we need to attend this concert.
Yes.
Have you been, were you a Men at Work fan going back to childhood?
Like, yeah, to childhood. I was always a fan of like Land Down Under, loved it. And then like, not realizing how amazing the whole band was until like that Scrubs episode where Colin Hay plays Overkill through that episode. And I was like, oh, I just love this song. And like literally now it is like literally my favorite song. I am obsessed with that song. To our friend Atiba, who we went to the concert with yesterday, I sing that song whenever it plays. And so now he'll play it all the time, like really pushing my level of like...
there's like you've reached a saturation point.
Exactly, I'm almost there. But he makes me sing it for people.
Sure,
and dance, and I get a little annoyed, but I do it because it's also a compulsion.
Yep.
But I just love that song so much, and it's a testament to it. Because like I just love the song so much. So you sending me that acoustic version, I was like heart eyes for you. I was like, oh, are you kidding me? This is fantastic.
I mean, it is just one of the best. Like, the lyrics are great, and the chords are great, and his performance is great, and it's so fun to watch someone who has such a command over their vocal cords.
Yes.
Because he's nailing these really high notes, and I think he just has a very grounded head voice because his face is so relaxed.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like when I try to go, I can't get to sleep, like you just get to that like sleep. Like it's, you just feel like your vocal cords just want to tie in knots.
It's just like, what are you doing?
And he's just so sleep. You go, he didn't even have to drop it a half a step.
No.
He was just like right just on.
Saying like the album, Diving into deep. There's that one. I'm like, wow.
Yep.
It's incredible. I blew my voice out yesterday singing along to everything.
We briefly paused to thank our sponsor for this episode of the I Think You're Overthinking It podcast, Squarespace, whom I've been talking about for years. You probably know it's the all-in-one website platform designed to help you stand out, to help you manifest whatever kind of digital thing you want to online so that you can succeed. I've been a customer for a very long time. I've talked before about how much I love the design elements, but... Also, listen, I used to like really get in and play with the code and really, I like to mix things around and really customize it. But look, I'm doing a podcast now, pretty much full time. I'm a dad of a toddler. I don't have a ton of time anymore to really focus on the minutiae of, code. So I just love how simple and modular it is to work with Squarespace. You can just drag stuff around. You can drop it. You can see it in real time. And it's just a seamless, elegant process. So here's what I would like you to do. If you are ready to create your digital presence online, head to squarespace.com/Hardwick, H-A-R-D-W-I-C-K, my last name, for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code Hardwick to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the podcast, which we now return to.
I do have to compliment you on filling in for Michael McDonald on the Christopher Cross songs.
Yes.
And not just Ride Like the Wind, but the other one too, where...
Yeah, I really don't... what's the name of the song? I really don't know.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Because there was a minute we were like...
I'm just that way.
Mike McD could like show up.
Yeah, I was like almost certain he would. I really wanted him to like come in like on one of those little like a rocket pack, just yeah. Like where you just kind of hear from the background going, Mexico, like you know, like just like coming in from the back of the forum and then land on the
exactly.
stage.
Exactly. Like everybody, the
such a long way to go. Okay, but because he's going a long way from the back exactly. of the forum, like it just it would have worked so well.
It's Lonely After All's name of song.
Lonely After
but,
All.
But there's that Rick Moranis.
Oh, yeah, the classic SCTV
sketch, which is just one of the funniest things where he's like, Rick Moranis is just like driving to get to the studio, lays in the track, and then like like forgets and like comes back. Just like,
he's got to keep coming back.
He's coming back.
Yeah. It's I love sketches like that because, you know, when you watch a lot of comedy or if you, you know, most comedy things, you can track them.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I kind of think I see where the germination of this idea was and how they got from point A to point B and how they paid it off. That's just one of those ones where it's like, who, what, how did they, it's like, oh yeah, it's like nailing the Michael McDonald part of Ride Like the Wind. And it's like, he just can't leave this. Every time he leaves the studio, he gets a little bit farther, but then he's got to get back into the studio yeah. where I guess they're just still recording.
He's just like going, he like yeah. shows up. One of my favorite bits in that, like he does this physical thing where he starts to walk off. He goes, and gets back to the thing. Oh my God.
SCTV was like, 10% vaudeville. There yes. was just like a little bit of like Catskilly kind of
yes.
humor in there.
This borscht belt.
but they were, you know, I think they were just making these sketches in a vacuum in rural Canada.
Yeah.
And probably just didn't imagine like, well, who's even watching this?
You know? Like, exactly. Like this is just, it's just funny. Like, you know, that Second City sort of writing through improv and sketch. I don't know if that's how they wrote the show, but that's all their skill set.
Were you UCB? I can.
No, I was Second City.
You were Second City.
Second City.
So when you're in
Chicago,
when you're writing sketches, how much are you thinking about what's funny to you versus like, is the audience going to like this?
Well, that's an interesting thing because I think it's always what's funny to me. But at that time, you know, we came up through Detroit improv. Versus Chicago improv. In Chicago improv, I think the audience is on board immediately because they know what they're getting into as far as improv goes.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of like leeway that they grant. They're like, oh, okay, they're making this up on the spot, so we'll give them some space to find it. In Detroit, these people are coming from, you know, working the line at Ford. These people are, you know, they're like, we spent how much on this? And is this stand-up or is it not stand-up? So we had to learn to get them on board quick,
yeah,
you know, and keep them on board, and so that became sort of a, you know, a muscle in that, you know, I think it had to be funny, even if it was experimenting. We want to experiment with it still being funny, even if we're taking them with us. It's still, you know, it needs to be core funny. You know, we never want it to be a bit that's just like so over the head. Like if you get it, you get it. You know, it's like, that's not fun.
Well, that is kind of sometimes, especially if you're a young writer, you can get into that space where you're like, I'm going to write so far over the audience's head
because
I'm so smart. And it's like, okay. But then at the end of the day, who enjoyed that?
You know what I mean? And it's not like, you know, talking down to.
No.
Or like, it's because it's not... But you know, we're not up there being Frasier,
right?
You know, although very funny,
very funny,
very funny,
yeah, yeah.
But you know, it's like always going to be about like person, like flaws in a person that you can all recognize.
But then you have to get into that, like we said, you know, getting into that immediately, because I find the stand-up version of that is when I am touring. People come to see me on purpose. I have a lot of leeway to kind of, you know, it's not like I immediately have to be like grab their attention.
Yep.
But I do find like the longer I don't do local sets around LA where I'm just guesting on a show and doing like 12 or 15 minutes, like, oh, that's right. this audience doesn't give a shit about care. You. They yeah. you have 5 seconds to sort of pull them in uh-huh. or they're just out. And it's like, oh, God, yeah, that's a whole other skill set. Yep. I think I forgot how to do that.
Because, yeah, you just got to get those like first like 3 laughs. That first laugh out the gate. One more a little bit later, and then they trust you.
Yes.
You know? And then you can play. And then you can, like, sort of teach them what you think is funny.
Yes.
And they trust you enough to, like, go there with you.
Yeah, because I think they will as long as they kind of are open, mm-hmm. or at least as long as they feel like, okay, well, this will probably pay off. Or, you know, I already like this person, so I don't mind going along for the ride. Did you find that with – are you talking about for sketch or improv?
For improv, actually.
For improv.
And then we would write sketch through improv a lot. But then we would also just write sketch. But that was like the Second City sort of, or that is the sort of Second City process, is to like you improvise scenes and then you re-improvise them and you sort of like write them down and then sort of like make tweaks and then you re-improvise it again and you sort of write the sketch based off like what happened in the improv.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. So are there two separate... Is there like an improv night and a sketch night?
So at second, so when you're writing the show on the main stage in Chicago, and it also was in Detroit and you know Toronto, you usually do your 2-act written show, mm-hmm. and then when you're in process, you're swapping scenes out within there. But then you do an improv set. The 3rd act is a completely improvised set.
Oh wow! Okay.
And so when you're in process to write a new show, you're introducing you're finding. See, you're playing regular scenes, but also like, you're introducing concept. Or like, but let's see what this happens. If like, you know, I have this idea about like a teacher who is really just like trying to be wants to like be the same as the students. It's like, you know, that's a broad concept you go in there with. Everybody knows the sort of like the idea of the bit, and then you just improvise it. Then sometimes you like have completely written a sketch and you bring it and you try it out on the stage and like sort of you can then tweak it and like re-improvise it. And then slowly those things, the director like kind of like tweak it, give you notes on it, and then you'll start to like sub them into the 2-act written show. And then eventually, after about a couple months, the whole show is turned over, and then you have a new show.
God. I mean, it sounds so stressful.
Yeah.
Probably very, probably really exciting and exhilarating when you're a young comedy performer, improviser.
Yeah.
But if you really thought about... If you really thought about it too much, you'd be like, how the fuck am I supposed to do that?
Oh, my God.
Why would anyone do that? That's so taxing. But
I mean, that was like all we did, you know, 6 days a week, 8 shows a week.
Wow.
So we're just like,
you're in the momentum,
exactly. The muscles are just firing the whole time. You're improvising in the shows anyway. And you've been doing this show for... sometimes like a year, which was like too long. But you're doing these shows for so long, so you're like antsy. You want to play. You want to get new stuff out there. You know, so it's like you're all chomping the bit. It does get stressful when you're like, ooh, I just can't make these two things connect. You know, I know we need something like this for this space. And like, what's the concept? Or to write a song. I'm not a songwriter. So when like the pitch would be like, bring in your song pitches. I'm like, well... It's going to be about a guy who likes a bucket or something. Great concept.
But that sort of that's an interesting exercise, because then it's then you're really having to expand, like just making anything funny. It's like where I think that helps to sort of illustrate that the concept can be what sells the sketch, but a lot of times the execution is what can, so something could be about anything, but as long as you can find like the funny angle, and it is a slightly different way of writing, mm-hmm. but it is really satisfying if you can figure out how to make something mundane, like what's the angle on that?
Yes. It varies. And like once it hits and once it's going, you're like, oh, it just feels good to get like a full audience just crack, where you're like holding for laughs on this thing. You're like, oh, yeah, we got him. And then you do that for 2 months and then immediately you're fucking with it because you're like, yeah, I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
It's like me and Tim Robinson and I, we were on the main stage together in Chicago, Second City. We did 2 shows together there. And we do the show regular for the first like couple weeks, and then we're just playing with each other, you know, just trying to make each other laugh and like just trying to throw each other off. Because that's the other thing too, you do these shows long enough, at the 2 month point, 3 month point, you're on autopilot. So you're not even thinking about what you're saying anymore.
Yeah.
And if the, and when you do, that's when you throw yourself off.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, what's my line? Oh no, what's my line?
Yeah, because it's just been muscle memory for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to hear that and then bringing it back to like these bands we saw last night who have been playing these songs in some cases for 50 years.
50 years.
You know, 40 to 50 years. And it's the same thing with stand up. It's how do you present? I mean, I don't want to say old ideas. How do you present pre-existing ideas that are well traveled in a way that is fresh for the audience? How are you keeping it fresh? And one example that you mentioned was like, well, you and like Tim in this example are just trying to make each other laugh. So that's how you freshen it up.
Yep.
But were there other ways where you're like, I don't, and it's funny to think that you could do a sketch for a couple of months and then you think about bands who have to play songs for decades. For
decades.
that, you know, like, how are you keeping some of those things new for the audience?
Yeah. Like, that, yeah, right. That's the question for a band. I figure that there's such like specific harmony and like you, the song is like written, you know, with such craftsmanship that you want to like hit those notes and you like feel satisfaction when you like get that exactly right.
Right.
Whereas like with the comedy, it's like the timing off of what he does, like if he changes his thing, it can ruin the rhythm of my next line. But then that's fun because now I'm like, oh, you know, we don't have to get exactly, or we can get here. I mean, I guess the same with music. I'm talking myself into a circle. But like, yeah, you know, like, oh, so I mean, I'm guessing I'm going to sidetrack one more time. Because like that would happen on main stage. We would be messing around. We get to the point, and then like the director would come by and be like, hey, you guys, bring it back.
Take it. Let's reel it in a little bit. Back, you have a little too much fun up there.
Yeah. Or you get like selfish, and like somebody's like, wait for their next line because you're like doing like a little dance because you're like, this is eating them up. And somebody's like, I got to say my next line. There's no way this is going to be a laugh line now. There's just like the air has been sucked out of it.
You know, that's so funny because if you were like a professional improv watching audience member or a sketch audience member, you would know like, all right, this is like 6 weeks into their run with this show. You want to now's when you want to see it because now you get to see the wheels almost fall off, and that is a whole other fun thing to watch.
Absolutely, because you're seeing it when they're still having fun before they're phoning it in. They're not phoning it in yet, you know. So they're having fun with it.
it's almost. We're not at the place where their brains have turned into a peach that's just been sitting on the counter for too long. It's getting a little soft. So just before then, this is where the juice is the sweetest in that peach is really where you want to see. It's like week six.
That thing, trust me. It's getting a little sparkly.
From week six to week eight, they really want to be doing other sketches.
Yeah, and they're gonna try and shoehorn that new sketch into this old sketch.
Do you still, are you... I'm sorry if I don't know this. Are you still doing live stuff regularly now?
I haven't improvised in so long. And it never started as on purpose, but just I haven't done it. And now it's like a whole thing of like, where do I start again? Like, where do I shake the rust off? And like, I just really don't have a huge desire to improvise live anymore, which is so weird because it was my whole life for years. I mean, like from age 14, 15 till maybe a couple years ago, all I did was talk about improv and like live improv, especially like in Chicago and like coming out here into LA a little bit. But the LA improv sort of like landing that I had was very different from Detroit and Chicago. LA improv is great. Like UCB is fantastic. You know, it's great, but it's just so different. And I was like, working and like sort of like using improv on shows like you know, improvising a little bit in Veep and stuff, where it's sort of like the outlet didn't feel satisfying to me.
Yeah,
improvising live anymore. Which maybe one day I will again and it will feel good, but I just don't.
But I think that's okay, you know. Like I think sometimes we can get into these ruts where we think, oh, but no, but this is one of my core defining things. And I think it's okay to reassess and go, but is that really what I want? I mean, it's okay to want different things. It's okay to do stuff for a time,
yeah,
and that can be the thing that defines you. I mean, just, you know, if you want to make as rudimentary of an analogy as like a haircut or like a members only jacket, it's like, you know, there are periods of time where you're like, this is my favorite jacket, I'm never going to take this jacket off, or this is the haircut, or I like, you know, I look back at some photos from 2009 where I'm like, I was really into the David Tennant sideburns,
yeah,
you know, and
I was really a vest guy.
Yeah. This train's never slowing down, and then the vest train and the sideburn train are in high gear, and Doc Brown's throwing the dynamite in to get us over the ravine, you know. It, and then after a while, it just sort of falls off, and it's okay to be like, that was fine for that time, and this just doesn't suit me anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay to. It's what I'm saying is, it's good to evolve.
Yes,
and you can always go back if you want.
Exactly. And like, if I'm not feeling it, I might want to force it on myself, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's the worst way to have a show. If you're like, you don't want to be doing it, and then you're like improvising, then I'm not improvising.
It is, but even just sort of talking about the momentum, it's a lot to get into that momentum of like, if you really wanted to do it the way that you did it, you'd probably have to do it, you know, two or three nights, a few nights a week,
yep,
to get back into the momentum of it, to get to a level that you were, you know, accustomed to being at. And then you sort of sit back and go, that's a lot of energy now. I don't know if I need to, like, what's the, if it's not really scratching that sort of creative itch and you have other ways to do that, then I think it's fine to be like, yeah, no,
yeah, exactly.
I'm taking a break.
Exactly.
And did we talk about this when you were on the podcast like 5 years ago? You do not, stand-up was not your thing.
Stand-up was not my thing. No, I think I've done maybe one stand-up set, but I did that as like a character, you know?
Got it.
So it was like, oh, this is your Uncle Chris who's coming to, it was actually Uncle Charles. But that's like, You know, never prepared jokes and like crafting a set. My 5 minutes, I never did it.
And are you are you working on a show right now?
No, I'm chilling, free agent, like working on some movies and stuff like that. But
are you good with downtime?
I really have never really had it, so I'm trying to be. I'm getting a lot of activities done that have been like sort of pushed to the wayside. So no.
I feel like there's a certain amount of momentum. I do hate that we're so conditioned by this kind of formless entity of the business, where it's like, oh, how validated do I feel based on what I'm doing?
Right.
You know, and is there room for, you know, is there room for you to feel validated by doing stuff for yourself, which is really, from a humanity perspective, like, is a good thing to do. You should do stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
But then also for like, well, you know, it feels nice to work, and obviously you get paid to work, and obviously it feels very validating, like, What do you think is a good balance between, you know, not being overtaken by solely defining yourself by the work that someone else grants you,
right,
by this, you know, that you've been deemed worthy to participate in this business.
You are one of the chosen
who yeah, exactly.
can participate. I think the balance is, with acting and like you work on shows, it is what we love to do, so it's like a hard thing of like just work. It is the fun and the work,
right?
You know, so it's the hobby as well as the bill payer, as well as like the art.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not doing that does it does feel like, oh, I'm unfulfilled in that, but so many parts of your life that are go kind of like ignored, it's nice to check in with them again.
Of course.
You know, but like there's that antsiness of like also like it there's no security, like unless you are on like a series that you don't even know if it's going to go for 20 seasons or 10 seasons. You're like, all right, well, that's done. Will I ever work again? Uh-oh.
But I do think pretty much everyone goes through that.
Yeah, exactly.
Even like people at the top levels that you would go, well, of course they know they're going to. I feel like
they feel it. So like part of the time where you should be relaxing and like enjoying the free time, back of your head you are like, When's this free time going to... Is this free time going to end, though? Am I going to get to do
I mean, I want free
stuff?
Time, but not like free
you know
time.
I mean, not free time, free time. So why? What's the best way to get that? It's like in between seasons of a show.
Yeah.
You know, so you know you're coming back for season two or whatever, and this time in between, I'm like, I'm just taking vacation time, or I'm going to like work on this little thing, and I'm just going to like go, because I'm not, you know, feeling like I've got a... Which, like... It's not like you're going hunting for
right
for truffles as a pig, but like you're definitely your head's like your ears are out. Because yeah, I mean, I certainly you know I really do like I'm you know this free time I'm like ooh I can build myself my new computer I can like you know I got this new workspace which is like I call it the laboratory and it's like it's where I go and I like write there I'll like set up a gaming set up there I you know I can do, I do my Zooms there so it's like a nice space and I'm like really making it my own Nerdist, you know, but that doesn't take any guests.
That's awesome. And it is like your activity. That's totally what that was like, yeah. An activity center, you know,
exactly.
You know, when Meltdown was still Meltdown, it was like, oh, you could go read comics. People were playing D&D in the corner. There were shows in the back. You could do podcasts up top. Mm-hmm. And it really does feel like as nerdy adult performers and I guess business people really at the end of the day we're just trying to recreate a clubhouse.
We just want a clubhouse you know
like a multi-use clubhouse for
the stuff that shouldn't be in the house needs to be somewhere.
Games and work. It's work and fun. That's why it was interesting to hear you frame it as like your hobby and your art and your business. Like, oh yeah, it is all of those things. And you know, and striking the right balance between all those is really good because, you know, if it becomes too businessy, then you lose a little bit of the other two. If it becomes too arty, you could lose some of the business. And it sort of reminds me of that formula. I studied animation for a minute at UCLA. Oh, and one of the things our animation professor said, and he didn't invent this. This is a thing I've seen before, but you're basically given... you have three concepts: money, quality, and time, and you only ever get two. Uh-huh. So if you focus on, you know, if you focus on the making it inexpensive and the time, then you can lose the quality. If you focus on time and quality, then it gets expensive. You know, so it's finding that balance between the concepts of like, you know, like you said, business and art and hobby, mm-hmm. so that it's creatively fulfilling and art and also it feels like you're still learning something, which I think is what hobbies partially are. And also like, and it pays the bills.
It pays the bills. When it goes, it goes.
Yeah.
You know?
We briefly pause to thank our sponsor for this episode of I Think You're Overthinking It, BetterHelp.com. I mean, listen, what better sponsor to have for a podcast about overthinking and some generalized anxiety issues than BetterHelp? You know, I mean, I have talked openly for the last, you know, 15 years of doing the podcast about how therapy has really benefited me. It's benefited so many people I know. And listen, if you feel like you're struggling and you don't know how to, you know, get to that finish line of finding the person that you feel comfortable with, someone that you feel like is, you know, committed to understanding you and helping you out, that's where BetterHelp can come in. They have this therapist match commitment. They do the initial matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. Then there's a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences. And they have over 10 years of experience in industry-leading match fulfillment rate, which means they typically get it right the first time. But if you're not happy with your match, that's fine. Switch to a different therapist at any time. It's fully online. You can pause your subscription whenever you need to. Switch therapists at any time at no extra cost. And there's over 30,000 therapists to choose from. They have served over 5 million people globally at BetterHelp. So as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Find the one with BetterHelp. And if you listen to this podcast and this ad, you get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Hardwick. That's my last name, HARDWICK. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Hardwick. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode, to which we now return. Are you someone who likes to pitch shows, or do you want to do you like writing on stuff, or is it really kind of finding that really great balance of like writer performer?
It's kind of all those things. I do like to write, you know, stuff that, you know, I always come up with ideas. So I'm always outlining shows. Like, there's so many outlines I have of shows that just don't, that are just for myself even.
Yeah.
That I'm like, this is great. All right. What's this new idea? But then, like, you know, there's so many, like, the shows that we pitch, that I, you know, a writing partner and pitch that here, pitch that there. But I also do love to just go on to a show that is written and, like, see this character and, like, then try and interpret this thing.
Yeah.
You know, without having the, without feeling that, not the, I don't want to say the pressure, but coming into this as, you know, like, you know, sometimes you want to do a, you know, the Odd Couple. You don't want to always have to write the Odd Couple.
Right.
You want to come in and be like, ooh, this is an, ooh, what's my take on this?
Yeah.
You know, so I do love.
These two guys shouldn't live together.
One's messy. The other one is.
He's very neat.
Tight.
They'll never. I mean, sure, they could be casual friends, but they couldn't live together. They couldn't
live together. There's no way it'll work. They're too odd of a group.
Wait a minute. They're figuring it out.
Huh.
It's almost like their differences complement each other.
Huh.
This is going to work.
This might work.
Interesting.
Just might.
Yeah, but that idea. But of course, the Odd Couple, like something like that, is that has to be molded and perfected and and workshopped and done to death so you can break it apart and redo it and then find that perfect. It is... You know, I do often think like, oh, it's so much better to focus on process than result. But the process can be very daunting if you have a certain expectation for how you...
right.
When the result starts to get in the way, like, I like the process, but it's still got to be good.
It's got to be exactly. I mean, that's always going to be a thing.
Are you good with... can you put stuff down, or do you get too perfectionist with stuff, or can you do you know when stuff's done?
It's a little bit of both, right? Because I feel like a little bit of my ADHD, which as an adult I've been diagnosed with, is like, oh yeah, I will either like put something aside because I don't think it's ready, and then I will like sort of like hide from it, you know, or I will just tweak it, and then just, again, it's never ready. Or sometimes I'll just be like, that's done, get out of my sight, you know?
What is the neurotypical, like, I don't know how else to approach
it. How else to do things?
Like, what would someone who didn't have that, like, when I think about, like, okay, I know that I do exactly what you said, and I know that, like, if something seems daunting, I might tend to just push it aside until I can, you know, and I know that there's perfectionism stuff, but, like, what if you didn't, what do people do that don't have, like, an overactive internal monologue?
Yeah, right.
Do they get stuff done, or do they just, like, not, do they just kind of complete a task and then just not think about it ever? Like, I really can't even wrap my brain around.
Like what is the alternative?
Yeah.
I think they just do those, but in a tighter timeline.
Do they?
You know, I think so. Whereas, like, you know, you put something off, but you put it off for, like, a couple weeks, not for, like, months.
I mean, is literally anyone like that, or is everyone just like this, but we just kind of label it this just to kind of identify it as a thing? I don't know if I know anyone who's sort of like, oh yeah, I just come in and I do a thing and then I forget about it and it doesn't have to be perfect and I just enjoy the experience, or I don't, and but then I just move on, and you know, it's like, what? I don't know any other way than this playbook to try to achieve a level of something. I don't know. What's the alternative?
I guess it's also like a thing about like comedy and art and like this, because it's constantly evolving. So like, it'll never be completed.
Right.
You know, but even like for a mechanic, I guess even a mechanic, like a car person who like loves their tinkering around their car, it'll never be complete either.
Right.
But it'll drive, and then they can like, but like, yeah, with like a sketch or like a stand-up set, you're like, oop, there's a laugh here that I didn't squeeze out there. Or like, I want to, you know, I know I can beat this joke. This joke works. It works. And like, so with writing specifically, sometimes I'll get caught up because I'll be trying to like find the perfect line here. And I need to just put put words here and then come back to it.
Right.
But I won't. I'll be like, what is this person says?
So you can't move on until you complete that.
And that's why a text message and an email is also a nightmare for me, because I'm like texting and I'm like, what's this?
This is where I think we got fucked up by video games when we were in the 80s, where it's like, you can't get to the next level until you complete this. Yeah, it just conditioned us to never be able to go, I'll just go straight to the boss level and then come back and do the... No.
I got to make sure I get all these little gems.
That's a little open worldy. You can do those fucking quests, you know, like those. That's later gaming. We weren't conditioned on open world. We were conditioned on very linear side-scrolling.
Yep.
I feel like when I hear you describe it, I'm like, did we get fucked up because of the limitations of technology of the video games that babysat us when we were kids?
This is a realization. It really is. I'm like, you say that, I'm like, oh yeah. That's why it took me so long to finish Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Oh my God. Did you complete?
I had to go back.
Did you do main quest first, or did you do a bunch of side quests and then main quests?
I did a bunch of side quests, then got sidetracked, didn't go back to playing the game. And when I did, I was like, I don't know how to use any of the powers. So I just start over and then beat the whole thing. But like, because I was doing side quests, side quests, side quests, side quests, side quests, side quests. Get this, you know, go to what's the water land? You know what I mean? Get all my companions, and then like right before Ganon, I was like, oh, let me do a couple more side quests, and then I like traveled. I had to go somewhere. I didn't bring my Switch, which why not bring a Switch? The whole point of it is it goes anywhere. But.
Say when we were kids, we would have killed for a video game system that was equal to an arcade playing experience. Yep. And now we have it. I'm like,
yeah, it's
whatever.
Yeah, sure, it's there. I think, you know,
it'll always be there. That's so interesting to hear you say that because it. I did the same thing. I did that on Skyrim. I did a million side quests before I,
oh,
you know, like,
my God.
You know, went in and defeated the main dragon. But
yep.
But now I've realized my wife and I are both playing Hello Kitty Island Adventure. And the reason is I have discovered that my Zen garden, my modern Zen garden, is... running predictable errands for cute animals.
Hilarious.
To make them like me.
Amazing. Amazing.
Every night, I have a series of tasks to perform. I know they're going to be... It's going to take a little bit of... But a minimal amount of effort. There's a little bit of an arc. I will achieve something that then fires off some reward center in my brain. And then I can... I mean, it literally is a Zen garden. And, you know, it goes back to Animal Crossing.
But say Animal Crossing... So that was my problem with Animal Crossing. It's like I went to visit my friend's island, and she had an amazing island. I'm talking about everything, every duck was in a row. I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And I go back to my place, and it's like nothing because I was collecting things to then make it amazing, but I never put anything up.
Oh my God, you got stuck in the collection process?
I got stuck in the collection process.
Oh my God.
And I'm like out there trying to like play the stock market with the turnips. You know, I'm like, all right, I got enough money to do all this, but let me get a little bit more. And then I never like, you know, I was able to buy my boxing ring. I'm going to have that boxing ring in the house one day. Never put it up, but I'm like collecting all the stuff. And I go to her place, I'm like, this is incredible. Oh, that's kind of the point of the game.
I don't know how things work. I am a huge Nintendo fan. I often wonder, like, why not just do DLC for that game forever?
Forever.
I would have paid money to keep that game going.
Absolutely.
I will say I appreciate that we all had a wonderful distraction during the pandemic to suck our attentions away from the, you know, coronavirus.
Yep.
But the... And also, like, how we socialize, like, going to each other's islands and finding out, like, who had, like, you know, the killer prices on turnips, and then we'd go to their island and give them a gift, and then we'd come back with, you know, 10 million bells. But I sort of feel like, God, we all spent, like, 2 years on these islands that we then just,
yeah, just like,
are full of cockroaches now.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know.
I turned on the game, maybe not very recently, but, like, after a long time, I turned it on. Went to the island, like, haven't seen you in a while, they all said. I was like, oh
God.
You guys, you've been living
lives. Piece of shit. What?
You were our mayor.
So you just abandoned us? It's not my fault. I needed more support from, you know, I just needed some DLC. Yeah, Tom Nook is a fucking zombie. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That'd be really fun if you didn't play the game for like 2 years and this thing just clicked on and it was apocalyptic, like, Animal Crossing, and then you had to like extract your island from the apocalypse.
I mean, DLC.
I mean, seriously. They did a good Zombies DLC for Red Dead Redemption. Why couldn't they do it for Animal Crossing? Animal Crossing Undead, like, you know? Undead Animal Crossing.
That'd be fantastic.
But I obviously don't understand business or the economics of things, because to me, that would have made all the sense in the world to just keep that game on DLC, like, ad infinitum.
Yeah.
I would have paid, like, $30 a year.
Bucks? I really would. I really would. But I don't know what the... I mean, that's that whole sort of game... like keeping games alive issue right now, right?
Well, Hello Kitty Island Adventure, I think they promised, like, don't worry, there's going to be a lot of years of stuff to, you know, and it is. It's just, you're just running errands for animals. That they'll like you. There's not even a currency in the game.
No?
No.
It's just favors.
Yeah, it's just favors, and it's bartering. Like, you have to collect certain things to then... get certain limited edition things, but there's no like global currency. There aren't bells.
And
you finish tasks and nothing really happens other than you just complete the task. This is my only, I kind of wish when you completed a task, you get a reward of some type.
Yeah.
But you do get the completion thing in your brain, like, oh, yay, finally.
I mean, is that communism?
Son, your mom and I are a little concerned about some of your activities. Son, are you communist?
Are you communist?
All I'm saying is all of us, like these animals, could live together on an island in a barter system where we support each other. Son.
No one needs to amass wealth. Everyone to his need.
It just reminds me that... you know, I feel like our friendship has developed over just running into each other at events.
Yeah.
And every time we go somewhere and I run into you, it just makes me so happy. And when we leave, Lydia goes, "You really need to be better friends with Sam. You guys really get along and you guys kind of light up when you're around each other." It's like, you really need to, she's like, it's just like this really beautiful like spouse thing where they're like, I'm telling you, this is a good friend match for you.
This is a good one. This is a good one.
You need to be better friends with Sam. So when I said like, oh, we're going to go, you know, Sam, and it is kind of funny, like when your significant other kind of like encourages like a friend date,
yeah,
you know, or it's like,
yeah,
you really should be like a playmate, and so she was delighted that that I flew back from Huntsville to LA so that we could go to that concert and then do this podcast.
The goal was so I was like, oh, Chris is coming to concert. He's like, oh, that's great.
I'm so happy for you. Yeah. Is he the communist?
He's the communist, right? The one,
the one who's like the Animal book. Island. I mean, it's we've gotten to do so many like fun nerdy events.
Yeah.
We get to go to Super Mario World, mm-hmm, the Nintendo World. It's just been I feel like moving away. Are there still nerdy events going on? Because I feel like since we moved up to Central California, I feel like I'm out of the loop.
I don't think they've had. I mean, I've been out of town a whole lot, but I haven't been getting those like invites to like come check out. But I don't know like what.
I don't know what's going on.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, Fast and the Furious at Universal, that'll open pretty soon.
Yep.
So I don't know, but.
We're coming up on Horror Nights.
Horror Nights.
Horror Nights is coming up. I went to look at my watch. I'm not wearing a watch. The Halloween overlay might be at Disneyland. I think it's like now.
Oh,
I think it's now. I think it started late August.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I think we might be in that season. It might be Halloween time down there.
I mean, I do love some Disneyland. I do love some Disneyland.
Are you and Nicole fans of do you go to like horror houses like around town, or just do you like the sort of the big ticket like Not Scary Farm?
I've never been to Not Scary Farm.
You haven't?
I've never been.
It's great. So Universal Horror Nights is obviously phenomenal.
Yeah,
and Not Scary Farm is really interesting because they don't. I haven't been in like a couple of years, but it was incredible because there's no like IP really that I remember.
Uh-huh.
They're really just sort of focusing on the haunted the gags.
Okay.
You'll go through. I remember going through one haunted maze, and you had a flashlight in your hand that obviously had some type of NFC technology. So every room you went into, it activated the flashlight in different. So one room, it needed to be a black light so that you could see some scary thing. Then it would flicker in another area. Then it was like, oh, that's really ingenious.
That is ingenious. That is so much fun.
Sam, we might need to go to Nut Scary Farm. This might be our next friend date. If Nicole is down for Not Scary Farm, Lydia is a massive horror fan. She'll be back in town for Scream Fest, so I don't see any reason why.
I mean, Nicole doesn't love the scary stuff, but she does love to hang out. So this sounds like a date destined.
What now? We're almost at an hour. I don't want to take too much of your time, and of course, you know, I like to frame this like a therapy session. We're almost at an hour, Sam. So, is there anything?
I've got so much more going on with me.
Well, I'm afraid it's going to have to wait.
I haven't talked about my mom yet.
That'd be great if this just dovetailed into that. And like, oh, this was just took an unexpected turn. Yeah, but I think Sam feels okay.
Healing.
You're not going to post any of that, right? Oh, I already... was that not supposed to...
This live?
What? Yeah. Remember when live stream... Do you live stream ever?
No. Another one. I was setting up myself for like a Twitch. I was like, here we go. I'm going to like set up my... thing and people can watch me play Helldivers 2 and people can watch me play the thing, and I got like the canvas all set up and it just never did it because it was like wasn't ready enough.
God damn it. Yes, I love you so much because I feel I have been through this so many times. Yeah. Not just with like different technologies on different platforms, but even just like I'm gonna find the perfect project management app.
Yep.
That's going to help me break down my life into. But the problem with finding the perfect project manager app is I need a fucking project manager app to find the project manager app because I need to break that into a series of steps. And I still have not found the perfect project manager app. So I too am stockpiling apps and I'll try this one and I'll try that one. Oh, it seems like a lot. I also am, you know, gathering all the acorns for this winter that hasn't come yet, and I've not fucking built a thing.
Oh, same. You're speaking my language. I even have like the files for like the overlays and like the fucking chyrons and stuff for like what my Twitch would be. And I'm like, all right, set that aside. And then when I get the background's got to be just right. And this, and like project manager, I tried Elephant Note.
Evernote.
Evernote. I tried Evernote.
I wish they would call it Elephant Note because it does have an elephant.
Yeah. And like that's an elephant never forgets.
Yes.
Why not call it Elephant Note?
Yep.
That was my problem with it.
Yeah, pack all these notes in your trunk. It's right it's fucking right there.
You call it your trunk, and then it's...
So Evernote's the one I've been using for forever. And
I forget to use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But there's an elephant on it.
There's an elephant on it. It's truly...
If it was called Elephant Note...
If it was the Elephant Note, I would never forget.
If it was called Elephant Note, I would be all over because that would be very much like Animal Crossing and Hello Kitty. It's like, I gotta make this elephant happy.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to feed this element, this elephant, my notes.
My notes.
And my tasks so that he is satisfied. There is a... Hank Green just created an app called Focus Friend.
Focus Friend
that I just downloaded, and it's basically supposed to help you focus and stay off your phone.
Okay.
So focus on tasks. And so the way that it works is there's a little bean and he knits, and so you go, okay, you can name him whatever you want. I named mine Bean Franklin.
Yeah.
And he knits. So you go, I need 15 minutes of focus time. So you send him off to knit. And you can't fuck around with other stuff on your phone. And you do whatever task you're supposed to do. And you come back. And it's gamified. It's basically gamified focus time.
Genius.
And so then you can trade those little things that it knits in for things to populate his little home.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is way in my fucking wheelhouse. And he's adorable. Oh, come on.
I mean, I'm going to get this immediately.
It's so hard.
Like, is it Bean Johnson? Is that what mine's going to be?
It could be.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, do you, at the end of the day, when you do all this like preparing to do, and Nicole is like, did you get a lot done today? Do you go, not really? Or are you like, well, I prepared a lot of things.
I think she's come to accept like, yeah, all right, he'll just work on his thing. And like the working on the preparing is the activity.
How do you think that we can and I mean you and me and anyone who's listening who has the same issue, which I imagine is a lot of people.
Yeah.
How do you think we can get past the... Because I know there's a lot of excitement in starting new projects. There's a lot of excitement in preparing for new projects and stockpiling all of these elements. And it feels very engaging. And there's a romance to it and a love affair with it. And then once you get to the doing, is it avoidance? Are we afraid to accomplish? Are we afraid to get hurt if we fail or have it not be perfect? Is it too overwhelming? Like, what is the fucking problem?
I truly think it is that. I think it's that we're afraid that once it happens, it's not going to be satisfying.
Okay.
You know, the thing is, I like the last example or most current example. I because I have that space, the what I call the laboratory mm-hmm. at home, what I was using as my home office, I've turned into a home theater and like built it out. And I like, you know, the speakers and all this stuff. And I had to force myself to turn on the projector and like actually put something on it
because uh-huh.
like it was never going to be ready enough to actually watch anything, you know what I mean? I was like, because I was like, oh, I gotta run the wires just right, I gotta make sure the length of this is right, and I can't watch anything until it's completely ready, because it has to be like this perfect thing, because I want the experience of that final thing to be pitch perfect. And like, no, it'll be perfect, but it can use it in the meantime.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to like force myself to do that because I the idea of perfection, I caught myself on that one. And I was like, turn it on.
So is that it? Is some of the answer like exposure therapy where you're kind of making yourself like, no, it's not. Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it so you can at least just kind of go down a path so you don't get stuck in this cul-de-sac where you're not getting anything done because your brain is just talking you out of it, or it's just, you know, compulsively preventing you from, you know, completing the task.
Exactly. It's like going to fight the main boss before you have all 20 hearts, you know?
Yes.
Like go fight again. You got 19 and a half.
It's
go get him.
It'll be okay.
You know.
And again, like if you really think through, like, well, what's going to happen if I watch this movie and this isn't perfect? Is it going to like break something in your brain, or is it just going to be like, it could have been better?
You know. Yeah. That's the question, or that's the sort of like thing that you're telling yourself, or I'm telling myself. It's like, am I just going to like not enjoy this thing that I love because of like a little hiccup here or there?
I did go through, I mean, I did mention it at the top of the podcast, but I did go through that last night when I left the concert. I really, when I got home, I was like, why didn't I just tough it out for another 2 hours? Like, what was it? You know, it's just like, I was just thinking myself into circles. Like, I don't want Sam to think I'm a bad friend. I loved hanging out. I appreciated the tickets. It would have been so fun. I could have gotten to meet the band that, you know, but my body and my mind last night at, you know, hour four of the concert, four and a half, was just like, you need to go home.
You need to
go home. You've been up almost a day.
Yeah.
And I, you know, at what point can we... Do you have little tricks that you can get yourself out of the thought loops?
No, I don't. I do not. I sure don't. Well, because another thing, I get that FOMO like nobody's business.
Yes.
So, you know what I mean? So I'll stick around because I'm like, if I leave, I might miss some fucking amazing story that we're all going to tell. Or, you know, everybody's texting like, we're going to this place. I'm like... Oh, I'm gonna miss the fun time. So I've got to go. But I've like just trying to not do those things and then forget about them. Or
just be. I find sometimes that it almost seems like, I don't know if anyone listening to this will understand what I'm. I imagine at least five people will.
Yeah,
it's. There are like loops in your brain that you want to close so that you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yep.
And sometimes when there's one that's just sort of like, feels like it's open forever, it's like, I'm just going to be stuck in this thought loop forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just always going to be this source of irritation in my brain that's just sort of spinning around.
Yep.
And I think what kind of helped me go back to sleep last night was just saying like, I need to be comfortable with the discomfort. I need to be comfortable knowing that, yes, I could have stayed. Yes, it could have been like the greatest night ever. Yes, I could have, you know. Also, I could have like passed out and drooled all over myself because I was so exhausted.
You could have vomited on Colin Hay.
I could have vomited on Colin. I really love.
Like, oh, I wish I'd gone home.
I really thought it was a wonderful choice to close with "Be Good Johnny" instead of "Down on." Sorry, I can't stop myself. By the way, very bold choice. Not only
very bold choice
because "Be Good Johnny" is one of my favorite Men at Work songs, and I love that. He did Down Under because obviously people are going to expect that.
Yep.
But it was the second to last song, and I think it was genius because "Be Good Johnny," they could really like fuck around with that song and riff through it.
The audience to do.
And it was energy was so high.
Mm-hmm.
But back to what I was saying is it's just is exposing your brain to be comfortable with the discomfort of. And just going, yes, this is the choice I made. Maybe I'll feel weird about it for a day or so. That will pass.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like every anxiety attack you've ever had. You're like, but what if this is the one that never, and it's like, you say that to yourself every time.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, but this could be the one that never goes away or this could be, and it's like, but it will pass.
It will pass.
You'll be okay.
And like, it's that thing of like, you know, or like Superman tells himself he can't be everywhere always. So like, this gets to be one of those things where we're like, oh, well, I'm just not there.
Yeah.
You know? And so like that, that's just another place I'm not at.
Yeah.
You know, because like, I want to be at this concert, but I also want to be at my parents, like visiting my parents. I also want to be at this thing. I'm not right here. So I got to be good with, you know, missing out. I'm missing out on a lot of things, but I'm not focusing on a lot of things. I'm only focused on this one. If I was there, I'd be missing out on being at home and chilling. So like, I got to like,
yeah,
accept that.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think I should have stayed, but I really shouldn't have. I really do.
Also, on top of that, too, let me also add, because if I when I'm at a concert, I scream sing, and like it's like so you have a tower speaker here, but you also have me directly to your left, blasting out these high notes. And like very rude. I'm like, ooh, what am I doing? I'm like,
in my mind, you were filling in for the absent Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
In my mind, you were Michael McDonalding.
Thank you.
You were really adding an element that should have been that, you know, would have been nice to. I don't even know where he lives. I don't know what.
We went by his house, tried to get him out of bed. He refused. See, he was fine with not being there.
Who's at my door now? It's 2 a.m. Please be the postmates. Did I order Instacart in my sleep again? No, I don't need shower curtain rings.
Wait a minute, yes I do. These are due for a revamp.
When a fool believes he rings, someone's at the doorbell. I could do this for hours to the delight of no one other than me.
And me.
And you as well. But it really was just like, it was such a great, I never go to concerts anymore. So it was like, it was just a really nice, it just felt really nice. And I love that. It's kind of funny, like the yacht rock movement and,
mm-hmm.
I know y'all are friends with Christopher Cross's daughter Maddie, who produced the Yacht Rock documentary.
She produced the Yacht Rock documentary,
you know, is a gift to humanity. Mm-hmm. And I know some people listen to it like ironically. I have never wavered in my direct, non-ironic love and appreciation of not just Yacht Rock, but that era of adult contemporary, like, you know. When I remember when that was like pop music.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And I still feel like there's a lot of stuff that's not covered in traditional yacht rock. Like, I don't really hear Hall & Oates much on yacht rock. And, or also like even sort of branching into like a Kim Carnes or like a Bob Seger. You know, it's like there are just a lot of that just really hits me on such a deep emotional level. So it was very special.
Very. And like, you know, that's an era of like music. Like, you sure... Like there's nostalgia to it and this, but there's such a strong musicianship.
Yes.
Like so many of these guys were session musicians for some of the greatest music that we know. So of course these guys like just love the craft of it, you know? And so like we love it. Like the music isn't just like pop crap, you know? Like Sailing It's just like a beautiful song.
About sailing.
You know? I'm like, oh, how about it? Okay.
In an era where songs could be about, I often think about that. It's like, he likes sailing. He's like, he wrote a song about sailing.
You know,
like, fuck, and also like some of the, you know, like hardcore classic rock songs, like fucking how many Led Zeppelin songs are about Tolkien?
Exactly.
Fucking, you know, it's like you can't ever tell me, you know, and even going into the 90s, fucking Soundgarden made a fucking cool song about a guy who plays the spoons.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know, when we talked earlier about improv, it's like, it almost doesn't matter what the concept is. Mm-hmm. It's really about the execution.
Exactly.
It's just 100% about the execution.
Yep.
So I thought that was all executed beautifully. I absolutely loved the concert And I think it would be. I hope they come through again.
I hope so too. They live here, right? Do they all live here?
I honestly don't know. I don't know where everyone lives. I don't know.
We'll find out.
I know. I know. I really don't know. I just assume they are pretty touring pretty regularly, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that forum was full. Like, the forum was packed.
Packed, yeah. I know they're in Concord. They went to Concord today, and they go to Vegas next. So, like, this tour, I'm sure, is, like, making its way around. But I would have to imagine that they, like, I would hope that they, like, play spots, you know? Like,
yeah.
Just for the sake of, like, loving to do it.
But, yeah.
I don't know. I bet Toto is harder to put together than Colin and his band, you know, or Christopher Cross.
Yeah, because Toto is a big operation.
It's a big operation. Yeah, because you're talking about like eight people, right?
It was a lot. There might have been like eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were amazing. I mean, like, mm-hmm. literally, Steve Lukather is like one of the best guitar players in the history of the guitar.
Yep.
And you're just watching him shred all these classics. And they're really like, they're playing like festival versions of these songs. It's like really like it was so, so, so fun. And I guess as we're sort of wrapping this out, it's not even a subtle irony that I had this experience with the concert last night, and I was up in the middle of the night, and all I could think of was, I can't get to sleep. I think about the implications
of diving in today,
and possibly the complications,
especially at night.
I worry over situations, Al. I know it'll be all right. It's just a